All week long, people have been asking me, are you going to talk about this? Are you going to talk about that? Are you going to cover this or that? And the answer to all those is, I really don't know. I don't think that's particularly funny, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. My plans for this class are nothing if not flexible. And you could omit the last three words and still be right, probably. Because there's so many things that possibly could be talked about, and I'm not sure what is most beneficial for us. I think my plan at the moment is that what we talk about today will be at least somewhat up to you. One sister yesterday asked me a question that I thought was particularly pertinent when she said, why are we losing so many of our young people? And I would like to have your input on that question, because I told her that I didn't know, and she said she didn't have any thoughts either. So I would like to for you to be thinking about that, and sometime during this hour we'll want to talk about it. Whenever you want to talk about it, feel free to raise your hand and we can talk about it. I would like to commend you on some of the things that I think we're doing pretty well. I'd like to commend you for holding the line on feminism. We don't have any women officers in the churches, nor do we have a push for them that I know of. I love our women in the church, and they seem to appreciate the freedom that the Lord has granted them in not expecting them to publicly lead the teaching and edification of the body. And a great many of them use the freedom that they have from that responsibility to become addicted to the service of the saints, which is a top-notch priority for any of us. We talked the other day about addiction, but here's the addiction I love. Addiction to the service of the saints, like the household of Stephanus in 1 Corinthians 16. This is an addiction for which there is no known cure, because none is needed. So I commend you for holding the line on feminism. I commend you for holding the line on the practice of homosexuality. We still believe and we still teach what the Bible says about that, that it is an abomination in the eyes of the Lord, and that practicing homosexuals will not inherit the kingdom of God. At the same time, I think we understand that homosexuality, or we understand homosexuality as an issue better than we used to. I think we believe that as a people, we should and do have a true compassion for those who struggle with these impulses, and we also stand ready to assist them in living for the Lord as they are willing to try to obey Him. This is very important because these folks need lots of non-sexual relationships to help them out of that life. In 1968, I was down at Volker Park with some of my friends from high school. Volker Park, many of you know, I think, just south of the Nelson Art Gallery. And as we were walking around the fountains down there, we were handed a piece of paper by some people who were canvassing the area. This piece of paper was detailing the Homosexual Bill of Rights. They had 10 rights listed there. And I'd never seen anything like that in my life. I took it home and showed my dad, and he'd never seen anything like it in his life. In fact, he was just blown away that it would or could even be discussed like that. Homosexuality at that time was just beginning to come out of the woodwork and rear its head in our geographical area. I may have told you the other day, I don't know if I did or not, that the first time I saw the word homosexual, I think it was in an Ann Landers or Dear Abby column in the newspaper, some girl had written in saying that her boyfriend said he was a homosexual to get out of the military. And I didn't even know what the word meant, but I knew it wasn't something I'd probably be asking about. So it was a while. I tried to look it up in the dictionary, I think. But it was not commonly talked about, as I recall, when I was growing up. I think we understand it better now, and I'm glad that we do. And because we understand it better now, I think we can love these people better than we sometimes have, because we're not as afraid of them as we used to be. I'd like to commend you for holding the line on the abuse of drugs and alcohol. I remember the first time I was at a friend's house when his dad was drunk, and it was not a pretty picture. My friend smoked marijuana because he said it was the equivalent of what his dad was doing with alcohol. I told him my dad didn't drink, so the equivalent of that for me was not smoking marijuana. But it's very important to me that my dad was not a drinker, because that meant that I didn't have that excuse. I didn't have the excuse that his drinking would have given me. I think the reason that that's important is that it wouldn't have taken very much of an excuse for me to go the drug route. I know that because any time I've ever had any codeine, I have really enjoyed it. And I am serious about this. Now, I have been blessed with several decades of amazing and good health. I thank God for that. But the first winter that Lynn and I were married, we were living down in Olathe, Kansas, and somehow that winter both of us caught a terrible cold, and we had a cough that just would not quit. And Bill and Marilyn Ford lived there in Olathe, too. We saw them fairly frequently, and they had a family doctor down in Gardner. So I don't remember his name, but they sent us down to this family doctor in Gardner, and he prescribed some cough syrup with codeine. That may have been one of the first times I ever had codeine in my life. I didn't even know what it was or what its effects were. But I really loved what it did. It took the edge off for me. And I never forgot those effects. And I haven't had it very often through the years, but I like it when I have it. I like it too much. And I'm glad that I know that about myself. One time I got a piece of steel embedded in my eye, in the cornea of my eye, and the doctor that took it out, when he was done, he gave me some pain pills for the pain, and I don't even have words to express to you how much I like those pills. I don't even know what they were, but I could take one of those pills and just sleep without thinking getting in the way, which was a new experience for me. And I'll tell you, Zach Crane, the other day at the basket dinner that we had at Gregory, he said he had 10 Vicodin tablets that he would let go for the right price. He was kidding, you see. But even though we were joking around, I can still feel the pull of that because I love that sense of leaving and floating away. And if my dad had been a drinker, I'm telling you, I think that I could have easily just been gone on drugs. And I probably wouldn't be here today, and I probably wouldn't be on earth anywhere today. So I appreciate the many good examples that we have had of brethren who have led lives of sobriety and consistency in that area. It means a great deal. It means more to me the more I think about it. I would like to commend you for holding the line on the minister system. We have many places that make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification, as Paul instructed the Roman church. Chapter 14, verse 19. He said, "You are competent to instruct one another." Chapter 15, verse 14. "We exhort one another, as the writer of the Hebrew letter said." Chapter 10, verse 25. "We edify one another, as Paul instructed the Thessalonians." 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. And we need to do it as well as we can, because when we don't, we're playing right into the hands of those who would professionalize and institutionalize the church. Every saint is a minister of the church, but no saint is the minister of a church. Mutual ministry fosters individual growth. Mutual ministry builds a sense of belonging. Mutual ministry promotes personal Bible study. Mutual ministry gives a better balance to the teaching of the congregation than a one-man system. I appreciate you holding that line. I would like to commend you for holding the line of congregational autonomy. I deeply appreciate the fact that we can come together and study the Bible together without our classes in any way or ever becoming policy-making sessions for the brotherhood, or even without that really being a fear that anybody needs to have. I would like to commend you for your development of conscientious elders and deacons in so many places. I believe that we are continuing steadfastly in the Apostles' doctrine on that issue. I would like to commend you for the expansion over the years that we have had in some places. In this area, as an example, over the past several decades, you have started a number of new congregations pushing back the borders of Zion. And I'd like in particular to commend the congregation, which was the first congregation of any kind of a Church of Christ in the Kansas City area, even though it no longer exists. The group that met at 26th and Spruce and then at 25th and Oakley in Kansas City had a big hand in starting lots of new congregations in every direction all through the years. These congregations, some of them went in other directions later. But that congregation at 25th and Oakley hung in there tough in the city for a long time and really worked in their area. I've been to VBSs there where the majority of the students were right from the neighborhood because they'd canvassed the area. And most of the students that they had were a different color than a lot of the older people in the congregation. And they worked together beautifully. That neighborhood was canvassed many times in evangelistic efforts, even though sometimes when the brethren came out from the assemblies of the saints, they found that some of their tires had been slashed. And there was other vandalism too. But they hung in there against the odds for a long time as the oldest congregation in Kansas City, still trying to brighten the corner where they were, and my hat is still off to those people for that. Amen. We have a number of young evangelists who are capable, diligent, and rapidly learning to do the work. I commend the churches for helping to develop them, and I commend the young men themselves. We have a lot of wonderful young families who are systematically teaching their children the Lord's way. So we have a lot to commend, and there is a lot to be grateful for in the Lord's church in our time. Now, my assignment includes the question, what are the new challenges of our age? We've talked about some of these before through the week, but I also wanted to mention that I think evangelism in the internet age may prove to be very interesting and perhaps very productive. We're just on the beginning of this. We have brethren who have started websites to that end, and it will be interesting to me and many of us to see how that can unfold. Maybe we ought to go back to that question that our sister asked, because I don't want to let the time go without us dealing with it. It's a very pertinent question. I didn't know how to address it. Why are we losing so many of our young people? That was the question. Would anybody care to begin to help on that? Okay, Marilyn, please. Let's get a mic for Marilyn. You want me to do it?
It might be better.
You're fine. Oh, there he is. There's Joe. Will it work?
Yes.
Okay. Marilyn, right here. Thank you.
I've been around for a long time, as my husband frequently reminds me how old I am.
Now.
But I've seen a lot of changes in the church through the years. I've seen a lot of good things and a lot of bad things also. But to me, in watching our children grow, three out of four of ours are faithful in the church. We only have those children if the church is the only teaching that they get, say. We only have them for 2 hours a week at best. That's if they come Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night also. The devil has them a lot longer than that. And he's working so much harder than we are, I think, to teach them. And he starts in with doubt, and then he causes them to not listen to their parents and not say, you know, not do and say the right things. And he's constantly working to where we only have 2 hours a week. And so I'm fully convinced that that teaching that they receive in that 2 hours has to be strong and to the point. And I think, for instance, your lesson yesterday, 5 or 6 years ago, people would have got up and walked out at that. There would have been older people who said, I just can't stand this, talking about this in the church. Well, it needs to be taught because the world's teaching it constantly. And if we don't teach against it, then we're not doing what's right. So I think we need to be stronger in teaching and watch their spare time more. Our kids were always involved in sports with three boys, and we were always there right with them. We took them and went with them wherever they went, so that they weren't out there where the alcohol and things were exposed to them as much. When they were exposed, we were right there with them. So I think that's part of it.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. I appreciate that. Somebody else has something to... Dave, over here. I'm not timing you, Joseph. Dave's forgotten what it was.
Thank you. Thank you. I truly believe that the young people will go toward whatever is more valuable to them. And it seems like as we advance further and further that they're bombarded by the environment, by culture, by things that we didn't have a taste of what they have today. And so what I believe we should do is teach an increased value of their faith. We can give them the faith. We can teach them the faith, give them a foundation that they can turn to and rely on and count on. But I don't think they see the value of that, because I don't think they understand eternity versus temporary. And so when something in the environment comes along that they are centrally attracted to and feel better about, they might lean toward that, forgetting the value of their faith.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. Dave.
I can look back and look at the generation, just the same generation as me, but a little bit older, 4 or 5 years older, Barbara's age.
I'm not touching that with a 12-foot pole, which is what I say for things I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Well, what I was getting at was they all, you know, to me, they went to church all their lives growing up, and now they're not there at all. And why is because most of them that I can remember were not married to, they didn't marry in the church.
That's a critical issue.
And they fell away. And that's, now it's not always that case, but I'm just saying that's,
I hear you.
That's a lot of it.
It's hard to overemphasize
right
it.
There.
Thank you, David.
I can't tell you, if I wouldn't have married in the church, I honestly don't know where I'd be today.
I hear you. Thank you. Christy's got something.
It seems that there is just a specific time frame that our children are most vulnerable, and I would say it's the end of the high school years and into college, that they are tested so hard by the world. And our society teaches that when they reach X age, that we should count them as adults, and maybe they're not. And we as parents, sometimes I see them letting go too soon and just sink or swim, throwing them into the world. And maybe we need to let go more gradually. Regardless of what our legal system tells us that they're adults, but as parents, maybe we can realize that they're not yet. And it's a real delicate thing. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that point, and it seems like communication is key, which goes to our relationship with them. If we can have a good relationship with them and keep communicating with them, and hopefully they want to communicate with us about something other than money.
That's true.
Tom's got something.
As a young person who nearly left the church a few times in the past 5 years, I really think that the fact that we're even asking this question should point to the reason why. Because it's the idea that the devil has us for the rest of the week that is causing it. Because for me, I went to church and I saw people acting in the same way as the rest of the world. And it's very intellectual, but a lot of people don't see people in the church acting Christ-like. I saw people backbiting, yelling at each other, during services, sending people out crying. My church was in the middle of a split. I nearly turned Wiccan because of it. And I know a lot of people who went through a lot less that saw just people doing nothing for anybody else, even in their own families. And if people have to ask, why is this happening to my child, then that means they're not asking the child. They're not a part of the child's life.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. I'm glad you survived, and it's wonderful to have you with us. I've really enjoyed you this week, upstairs and down. I think you're talking about a sense of belonging, to something that lends a sense of value, like Dave was talking about. Doug, go ahead.
Sometimes it takes some time, commitment, effort on our part as parents, and sometimes it takes some awareness part on our part as parents. But the advice I have and things we try to do is encourage them in the things that are right and discourage them in the things that are wrong. Sometimes I think we try to have too much of a kid glove effect on our children. We're afraid of driving them away, so we don't do anything, which instead of driving them away, leads them away.
Okay.
And I think we need to spend a lot of time thinking about, okay, what are our young people doing? This is not just parents, this is everyone, but what are they doing that's right? And let's emphasize and encourage that. What are they doing that's headed down the wrong path? And let's find ways to redirect them, to put something in the way, to push them a different direction.
Okay. Thank you, Doug. Leslie's got something.
If I could make one comment.
Joseph.
Before I
yes.
move along.
Sure.
One thing I've noticed in my short time with the church, with people who I've seen leave or no longer attend or whatever you want to call it, it seems like in the time away when they're not with the saints, the people that they then choose to surround themselves with is a huge effect.
Yeah.
So.
And the Lord said that 2,000 years ago. Evil communications corrupt good morals. Go ahead, Leslie.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that I'm really glad that I had parents that really cared about me, and that Mom's not here anymore, but she's still with me, and I know that she'll be happy.
And Dad,
I can't just imagine why anybody would, I don't know.
Thank you, Leslie. You still got that sense of belonging. Brenda.
I generally don't like to speak out, but this is something that's very strong on my heart. With our children, I'm learning. I'm not done yet raising them, so I refuse to eat crow at all. But what's so very important is what I learned from my mother. She says, when your children come talk to you and they say some crazy outlandish thing that you just want to scream yelling in the streets going, where did you learn that? She said, react on the inside and sit and listen to them. Listen to them talk. Give them the freedom to disagree with you, but in a respectful way. But talk. If your kids say at 12:30 at night, I need to talk with you, you turn the lights on. My husband and I will sit up in bed because we'll sleep when they're gone.
Yep.
But they need us right then.
That's right.
Drop everything and talk to them.
I agree. And I think that says a great deal. Active listening is hard. Most of us don't do it as well as we might. And don't ever let your kids know. We go back to that sense of belonging. That is a key issue. And I'll tell you what I think I said to the children downstairs, I'm not sure if I said this up here or not, but I'll go ahead and share this with you, even though I think I said it downstairs, although ordinarily what happens in the basement stays in the basement. But I mentioned to them that I've seen a lot of groups come and go, and it seems to me that some of the action of that group is dependent upon just a few people within the group, whoever the personalities are that are leading the group. There may be a group of 100 kids, and there may be three leaders within that group, and those leaders are going to be bent in one direction or another. And as they go, it's like a little herd of sheep. As the leaders go, so the group tends to go. When we have leaders that are godly and biblically oriented, then the group tends to go that way. When we have leaders that are the other way, then the group has more of a tendency to go that way. But the difficulty I have is that I don't think the adults seem to be able to do very much to determine who the leaders are or what the bent of the leaders is. I mean, maybe as they were being raised, we could have. But after they get to that certain age, it seems like it's just sat one way or the other. And I've never been able to feel like I affected that very much. We have these two different kinds of groups. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I think one thing we're doing right is these two-week meetings and things like this, because it's such an encouragement for them to get together and be able to edify one another. And I know when we were having our business meetings, we were having some issues for a while, and one of the things were maybe not had the tweak meeting this year. Like, oh, no. We don't do enough of stuff like this for our youth, I think. So,
thank you, Tom.
It's just an encouragement for them, I think.
Dave.
Well, I guess I'd like to ask my kids to comment on this more than anything else, but we're a really small congregation, and one of the things we've learned is that the kids have to be the central part of what you're doing. And our midweek service for years has been devoted to the kids and letting them have a good time and studying what they want to study and the adults acting like kids rather than kids being forced to act like adults. And that's been very helpful for us.
Thank you, Dave. Marcia's got something right beside you, Tom.
I would just like to encourage all parents, no matter how old your kids are, to not stop teaching them the Bible and the way of the Christian life that we have, because I don't think I'd be here if it weren't for my parents doing that. When I hit 18, I was so sick of church and Bible and praying. I was out of there. And I turned my back on everything I learned. And when I hit 45, I did a 180, and I'm back. So don't stop teaching your kids what they need to know. Even if they make faces at you or mouth off to you, turn their back and walk away. Know that you've given them the foundation that they need, because they'll come back to it.
Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate that. Who we got, Tom? Tim.
This is such an angry subject sometimes, I think, because we get frustrated with seeing a problem and not knowing what to do about it. But I've given this a lot of thought. And, you know, when here at Murray Road, when I was 13, 14, 15, we had 17 boys and then the sisters of those boys. And the thing that I learned from the experience of growing up, and I've traveled fairly extensively with what I kind of work I've done, so I've been to churches across the country, and not that I'm an authority, I'm not at all, but I think that we have to, I think if families, well, I'll just tell a story rather than try to explain myself. Brother Jim Bennett, that's a member here, used to work at Old Ham Sausage, and he would buy a pork loin and invite all the kids over, especially we boys, and we could eat pork loins and fellowship. It gave them an opportunity to listen to us talk. There was a place there at the house where there were activities that we could do, whether we played football or rode motorcycles or whatever we may have done. But my point is, I believe that if the parents of the church, mother and fathers, whatever, provide a place for the kids of the congregation to congregate, to talk, fellowship, eat together, whatever it may be, just like in the New Testament church where they went house to house or whatnot, that there's a modicum of control there that the parents can have, the oversight can have. Sometimes there might be one of the leaders show up, whatnot. Where rapport was built between the parents and the kids, there was a place provided for reciprocity of thought, mm-hmm. for fellowship, whatever word you want to use. And I think that one of the reasons that kids leave the church is that there isn't an opportunity for that to be provided, where they feel the flexibility, the outreach, all the things that are part of relationships.
Yeah, relationships and that sense of belonging. We keep, in my mind at least, coming back to that. And I think that is important to use our homes in that way. They said a week or two ago, tell Jennings who's going to be staying at your house. And I said, well, I don't know. It's a different bunch of guys every night. I don't know who will be there when. But they're there. They enjoy being together. And we enjoy the communication that we have with them. I think that is a critical part of things. Janice.
I'd like to say amen to that, by the way. I can remember Michaeline King, who was not exactly my generation and not in my parents' generation either, being a special friend to me and encouraging me in my faith. But my comment is different. I'm John's teacher on Sunday mornings, have been for about a year. He's the only child in my class because he's the only child at church except for really little ones or older teens. And he's been asking questions at the beginning of class before we really get started.
Good.
Things that come up in his biology class that he had in seventh grade.
Good.
Of course, I knew this would happen, and so as time was going on, and even in second grade, I observed his teacher talking about evolution. So I tried to prepare the ground some, but now he has real questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just dropped the study we were doing, and now we're going through a book called What's Darwin Got to Do with It?
Mm-hmm.
It's important for us to learn what our children are being taught.
Yeah.
It's important to give them the background.
Right. And that it goes they back can to the listening.
Yes. And it's important for them to see that there is science on both sides of the issue,
mm-hmm.
that evolutionists and Darwinists are looking at the exact same evidence, mm-hmm. but just interpreting it differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for them to see that they're not just a freak, because they believe that there is a creator. It's important for them to see that it's not stupid.
Right.
You know, John is an extremely intelligent young man, and I don't want him to seek that sense of belonging with a bunch of Darwinists that are surrounding him at school.
Examination of the evidence is very important for kids.
So I think it's important for parents today to prepare themselves intellectually by reading books or going to the Creation Museum in Cincinnati, and they've got all kinds of great material there, I might add. They even have a book that tells what each of the main high school textbooks says and what page they say it on, what arguments are being given to the children there, what's implied and what's specifically stated, and then evidence to the contrary. So there are all kinds of ways you can prepare yourself, but don't wait till your child gets in high school or in college and they're going away from home and suddenly they're exposed to this and, oh, I don't need God because, you know, evolution explains everything.
Yeah. If you can't answer your children's questions, learn to answer their questions. Yeah. If you can't answer your children's questions, then why do you believe what you believe? That is a critical issue. I thank you for raising it. Charles.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer in being in charge of your child's education from the very beginning. Don't trust any institution or anybody else to be in charge of it, including the church and certainly including the school systems. Be in charge of your child's education. The idea of belonging is important, but it's not... I could list a lot of people who have a strong sense of belonging with their peers that they grew up with in the church, but they're not in the church. They still love to get together with the people they knew in the church, but they're not in the church because they're not really believers in the things that the church teaches and stands for. And, you know, you can raise, like John, you can. My son Nathaniel has no peers, no one of his age in the church. But that's not the critical issue. I've never been afraid to take my children and work with a church for a prolonged period where there was no one of their age, because it's about what's true, and it's about what's right, and it's about what we believe and what we are convicted of, which we communicate to them, not about whether they have people the same age or whether there are activities specifically geared to their age. The truth of God doesn't change whatever age you are, and it's a marvelous thing in the church, if we are a brotherhood of believers, that you can have 7-year-olds who are friends with 60-year-olds. And the world doesn't provide that. There's no similar system out there. Yes, we need closeness in the church. Yes, we need a sense of belonging, but not belonging to a peer group, belonging to a whole family who share a common conviction, not just common interests. Definitely let's do things that are enjoyable. Let's do things that are fun. But it's about believing in the things that we stand for and communicating that belief.
Well said. Thank you very much. I think we got Dwayne. Hey, well, wherever. Okay. We'll come back. Don. All right.
Thank you. I don't think that I read that the devil is looking or is walking around like a raven lion looking for kids that he can take from the church. He's looking for everybody, and we have a lot of people leaving the church who are well beyond their teenage years. 20, 30, 40, 50-year-olds are leaving the church for a myriad of reasons. There's as many reasons as there are people leaving the church almost. That's not always something we can do anything about. Our job is to teach and to encourage, and I think to pray. Part of the reason that the congregations are getting smaller, I think, is the fact that the population is getting older, and we aren't probably doing as much as we should be doing to convert those who have not been reared in the church. I know I've seen an awful lot here that tells me otherwise, though, and so I am greatly encouraged. But perhaps we need to look more outside of what we have been doing and see new things and new ways that we can go about it, like you said, in the internet and so forth. But we also have all those things that you've been talking about previously. We have to contend with television and movies and the music system, and never before have I seen as many people walking around listening to their own form of music throughout the day. I mean, it's compulsive, obsessive kind of action, and that's the kind of thing, perhaps, that we need to be aware of as well. And the other thing, when I was I hate to say it that way. When I was a kid, I was told by my parents to expect to not be accepted because of who I was and where I went to church. Now, I didn't understand completely, and I surely didn't like it, but I knew what to expect. And I think that maybe we're a little too nonchalant about wanting our kids to be a part of the rest of their society. And I don't see any place that we're instructed that we should be wanting to be a part of society in that way.
Okay, thank you very much, Don. I appreciate that. We had Dwayne up here on the front row. Did we have you too, Keith? Okay, Keith or Dwayne, either one.
Three quick comments. I think the church has done a commendable job through the years of teaching people what to believe. But the problem with teaching people what to believe is that they don't learn how to believe inherently. We need to do a better job of teaching people why this doctrine, why this teaching, why this practice is consistent with what God wants and what God desires. Mm-hmm. I use instrumental music just as a quick example of this. If any of us were asked about, why doesn't the church use musical instruments? Well, the first two passages out of our mouths would be from Ephesians and the Colossians. Well, that may not be enough. If we ourselves learn to study and dedicate ourselves to searching for truth. That example will mean a lot in our families, and it will mean a tremendous amount to both young and old in our congregations, so that instead of being spoon-fed, we're feeding one another, mm-hmm. and we're really cutting into God's Word. The second comment is simply that we need to make sure that whatever part we are playing, whether singing as a part of the congregation or in some way leading, that we need to make sure that we relate to all ages and all experience. That happens through our enthusiasm, through our vocabulary. It happens through our preparation and our study. Because if something interests you and it shows, other people are going to be at the very least intrigued. Because, well, you know, why is it that Keith and Rick are so excited about this or that or the other? It's going to have an effect. And finally, we need to have our eyes wide open. I don't know how many congregations I've walked into, and I could point to the people who are on the periphery, who are ready to fall away. You look into their eyes, and there's nothing staring back at you. You greet them, and they say, oh, I'm okay. And we say, well, that's good. Well, you keep on having an okay day. No, no, no. That's not what God called his people to do. And there are a lot of factors involved in that, but we need to have our eyes wide open. If we don't, people will be gone and we won't even know that they were even thinking about leaving. We've got to see it and we have to react to it.
Thank you, Keith. I especially like that part about receiving the love of the truth. That is so important and so sound. And when we have that love of the truth, and a sense of belonging with people also having that love of the truth, I think it goes a long way. Dwayne.
Several years ago, at one of these meetings, I think the young people were polled on why they think young people leave the church. And I thought about that because it was made public to the adults, which was, I think, that was kind of very informative. And as a result of that, I went home and I kind of concluded that around age 16 is a critical age because that's kind of when they go into high school and they form new relationships and they get a lot more outside input from others besides the family and the church. And I made a list of things that what young people should know before age 16. And I know that's arbitrary, but fundamental things about the church, about the plan of salvation, about Christ, who he is, what his purpose is, what our responsibilities are. And it was really came out to be quite a large list. Unfortunately, I don't have it with me today, and I can only remember a few of them right off the bat. But
I like that idea.
The interesting thing was about it that a non-believer who attends at another congregation who's concerned about the same problem for some reason, young people leaving the church, asked me for that list. Hmm. And I was very pleased with that. But you know, I think we need to look at the fundamentals. We ought to teach them at an early age to make sure that they are understood to prepare them for the onslaught of different ideas, because I know a number of people that as soon as they got away from church, as soon as they got into college, they were gone. Mm-hmm. Just vanished. Their faith just gone.
I like that idea about the fundamentals, because it's been too easy for me to assume sometimes that people know things that they don't. And we need to stress the fundamentals repeatedly until we're sure that somebody's got it. Okay. And then we've got some over here. Go ahead, Mark.
I hesitate to talk about this because if your children fail, then he's wrong or she's wrong. But Joel's going to get married in about a week and a half, and you ever ran someplace really hard in a race or an event, and then when you won or you completed it, that you were winded and exhausted, and tired, but was felt good that you had achieved it. That's kind of the way I felt with the boys. Because if you put the passion, the desire, the goals, and approach raising your children like it's a race, then you're exhausted when you're all done. And from observing, parents lack passion. They lack desire. They lack motivation. Everything gets in the way. Do you pray together as a family? Before you go to bed, do you have your children pray? Do you read them books? Do you talk about God in everything? And because my sons used to say to me, Dad, does everything have to go back to God? Does it? Does every topic go back to God? I mean, yeah, maybe you're saying you're wearing them out. Well, if you want your son to be a scientist or your daughter to be a nurse, are you going to talk about being a plumber? So I think we as parents need to be passionate like a race for us to succeed.
I appreciate your words, and we appreciate your boys. We got Janet and then Dan. At least those are the ones I see. Oh, Becky. No, that's fine. It's Becky, but that's fine.
A couple of years ago down in Arizona, the ladies had a meeting, and the topic was being a mentor and a mentee. The importance of both, allowing somebody to be your mentor and then in turn becoming the mentor, having someone that you mentor. When we see someone struggling, I know sometimes we don't want to get involved in personal family affairs, it's none of our business kind of thing, is the way we think. But when somebody is struggling and we see that, it's important to become the mentor, whether it's of the parent or the child. And sometimes even the grandparents need that, whether we're actually older than the one we're mentoring or not.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it, Becky. Janet and then Dan.
I read a book several years ago, and it was written by a Seventh-day Adventist, and it was called Why Do Our Young People Leave the Church? And I need to find it and read it again. But the general premise was kind of a tough one because it's scary as parents, but the idea was that we don't teach our children to choose their religion. We tell them what it is. And kids love to choose. You know, you don't tell them to wear the red shirt. You say, would you like to wear the red shirt or the blue shirt? And they happily pick one of them. And I think maybe with our kids, if sometime through their high school years, if we could either one-on-one with, like Becky said, a mentor, someone that we would approve of, but have them choose that, or maybe as a group have the kids choose who they would like to have them teach them about the other religions, and not in a bad way of all the faults of the other religions, but the basis and premises for the other religions, mm-hmm. and let the children choose, because they're going to choose someday, and if they can choose their religion based on information rather than the parents forcing, you know, or making them feel guilty if you don't go to this church, you know. Yeah. So that was the idea. It is kind of scary because sometimes they may not choose it, but for us living in a very heavily populated Mormon area, it has given us a good opportunity because our kids see firsthand with their peers, which are 99% Mormon, the downfalls of that religion. And so we can use their friendships to say, what do you think about where they go to church?
I like that. And you caused me somehow there to flash back on a conversation that took place, I guess, 50 years ago. And I don't know that I'd thought of it since, but in the area of parents allowing their children choice, I guess. My dad asked me when I was probably 7 or so, I'm not sure, we were riding along in the car, he said, have you considered what you're going to do for an occupation? And I said, well, I'm thinking of either being a psychiatrist or a philosopher. And he said, well, most of the people that pursue those occupations don't believe in God. It'll be interesting to see what you choose. And I appreciated that he talked to me that way and recognized that I had a choice. He said, it'll be interesting to see what you come up with, I think is what he said. And it did help. It was a mindset that I appreciated as a child. I think Dan's next. Dave.
Yeah. Rick,
yeah.
This may change the flavor a little bit. I'd like to know if you believe that we have a collective free will, and if so, can that collective be manipulated?
I think we have individual free will. I don't think we have a mass mind, therefore not a mass will. But I do believe in the herd instinct, and when I watch those tapes of Hitler at Nuremberg and those rallies, there's definitely something to the mob instinct, if that's the type of thing you're talking about. Definitely something there. That's why when I used to go to baseball games years ago and they had that wave thing, I never participated in that because it seems too close to what I abhor. Come ye out from among them and be ye separate. You know, really, I cut my eye teeth on that philosophy, and I believe in that. Stand alone if necessary, but love the truth. Embrace the truth. Dan.
Looking back as a parent and thinking about what might I have done differently, I realized that we did a good job of taking them to church meetings, having those kinds of studies in the home and other places. We did a lot of talking. Expressing, but mostly our big deal was showing what we believed by how we lived. And then I've discovered that I'm not sure that's enough anymore, not only for our children, but for us. And the one thing that I would add now and what I recommend to parents that ask this same question is get to a place where your children and you will be evangelistic. The reason I say that is we only believe in something when we're willing to go to bat for it. And many of the children that leave don't really believe because they're not willing to go to bat for what they believe. The only way you get there, and I'm not a big evangelistic person, and it's a real struggle for me, but I believe we ought to teach ourselves to be evangelistic, to bring others in rather than just trying to keep the saved safe. Mm-hmm. We need to reach out to the lost and bring them to us.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people learn what they themselves actually believe in the process of being evangelistic because they had to. People were asking them questions, and they needed to be able to answer. Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'll comment two things. What Janet said, someone that I'm sure Keith holds dear in his heart as well. When I was a youngster, we had a history teacher in our congregation, and he did cover all the different religions, but he did it from a historical perspective. He looked at when they occurred. What were they an offshoot of? Who, you know, what their doctrine was? Why did they split up? He didn't pick on them for what they believe, but he showed, you know, why one occurred and then this came. Well, right there for me told me as a youngster, I don't want to be a part of something that was just an offshoot of something else. I want the true church. So it can be very beneficial to look at that. As a mom and as a working mom, and it's hard to say, but I think that the devil is the same today as yesterday, and he's out there, and he tempted youth 2,000 years ago just like he does today. But with the changes in our household environments, when we almost have to have two parents working, we have children home alone, they become independent younger because they have to. You know, they got to cook the meals or they've got to take care of themselves and things like that. We have to look for ways to overcome that. I don't know if, well, I got one here, I guess we're doing okay, but so one thing that we did is we just made sure they understood how important it was in our lives. And we, you know, you typically get 1 weekend a year or 1 week a year for a vacation. Well, we dedicated our week a year to the camp out.
Good
so you just have to do what you have to do to make them understand that that's important.
Thank you very much. Mike. Is Mike next? I think he is. And I hadn't intended to spend this much time on it, but I think it's a good discussion and worth the time. Go ahead, Mike.
I agree with some of the comments that Dan Green made. And coupled with that, I think it's important also for our children to be involved with activities where they are helping other people. Sometimes we schedule things where it's all about them, and life's not all about them. If they can go to the convalescent home or take somebody a meal or whatever it is that can be helpful in a good, positive Christian way, that can help their growth. It can help them feel a part. It can help them realize that, hey, it's important for me to be doing these kinds of things.
I agree completely, and I'm glad you raised that point. I think that helps with that sense of belonging, with the addiction to the service, and it helps the living of the truth. Okay, go ahead, Robbie.
Okay, one of the things that I've discovered with teaching the senior class here different times is, and then talking to the children away from the classes, one of the things they talked about was, usually they talk about, well, if we go to class here, we're just going to get a lecture. One of the things that I decided was not going to be, because I let them know right away, I like to talk, but if you don't want me to talk for 40 minutes, we need to discuss what we're going over. And one of the things I think we as adults run into is when we're talking to the younger people is we tend to talk at them instead of to them because we don't listen to what they're saying.
And that's a shame. They've got a lot of good stuff to say. The people in the basement right now are a delight to talk with, individually or as a group. They're just really terrific, and that reflects well on you. I appreciate everybody's participation. I wish we had time to go on with this. I'm hoping that the person who asked that question feels like they have been able to glean something from our discussion. We didn't go to any of the other things that I thought we might talk about, but that's just fine. I think it was a beneficial discussion, and I thank you all.